Good afternoon, everyone. I'm actually here representing Dr. McField, the former director of the Latino Health Collaborative, a 501c3 organization in San Bernardino. The title of our presentation is Promoting Equity and Access to Mental Health Services, Exploring Cultural Attitudes Among the Latinos. Project Access was funded through the Mental Health Services Act in 2009, and it served as the cultural assessment for the San Bernardino County Department of Behavioral Health. And at this time, I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. I'd like to begin just by giving you a brief overview of Project Access. The Latino community was just one of the communities that we worked with. We also stratified across two other groups, that being the African-American community as well as the Vietnamese community. But for the purposes of this presentation, we'll be focusing just on the Latino community. Questions that we put forth at the beginning while we were designing our methodology. Firstly, how and to what extent are residents of the Latino community in San Bernardino able to obtain behavioral health services? Secondly, and we emphasize this, what social and cultural beliefs about mental illness and treatment influence how people of different racial and ethnic groups seek mental health care? Thirdly, what factors are associated with better or worse access utilization of mental health services? And finally, what are the strengths of the current mental health services system, and how can they be harnessed to improve accessibility, usability, and sustainability of mental health services in a culturally diverse population such as ours in the San Bernardino area? And these are the learning objectives. We're basically going to be reviewing the barriers that we identified throughout our research project, and then also going over the strategies that were put forth by the participants of the study as well as researchers. So just a brief background on our area. Project Access was conducted in the largest county of the United States, that being San Bernardino County. It's actually about 1 hour east of the Los Angeles area. And a little over 2 million residents are in the San Bernardino area, and 47.5% of them are identified or identify with the Latino community according to the U.S. Census data. Some of the issues that we found during our initial literature review include that minorities suffer from disparities in mental health care, despite whether their mental health may be equal or better than their white counterparts. Also, mental health needs for minority racial and ethnic groups have largely remained unmet. Thirdly, mental health care system continues to affect persons in minority groups more than in whites, and those are in three areas: access to mental health services, which is what we're looking at today, also the amount of care that is received when it is needed, and thirdly, the quality of the care that is received. And finally, San Bernardino County has shown lower than expected mental health indicators in comparison with other counties in California. There was actually a brief analysis conducted comparing all the counties in California, and San Bernardino emerged as one of about five who was severely not meeting expectations. Let's take a look at service provision and take a look at a discrepancy that we noticed by comparing racial distribution information from the census data to utilization rates provided by DBH. As I said, the Latino community comprises near 50% of our population, yet when looking at utilization rates of the consumers who access DBH services, they comprise only about 21.9%. Whereas if we contrast with the white community, those percentages are a little bit more comparable. And again, we're not providing any more complex analyses in this presentation, but this is just meant for descriptive purposes. Moving on to our methodology. We used a mixed methods approach, so we had two phases using qualitative research methods. Focus groups and key informant interviews were our tools of choice, and then we followed up with surveys, or a quantitative phase, in which we actually developed our own survey based off of the themes that we found in our qualitative phases. And then we also ran a small secondary data analysis with some of the data provided by DBH. I'd like to also emphasize our partnerships, which served as the foundation for a research endeavor. We collaborated with three different cultural coalitions. And again, for this presentation, I'm going to focus on the Latino Coalition. And we also collaborated with two different community-based organizations, that being LHC, which I already mentioned, a Latino Health Collaborative, as well as El Sol, which is a neighborhood learning center, which actually houses a quite extensive promotor program. And we were able to not only have the promotores as participants in our study, but also they served as researchers, helping us with the planning, tool design, participant recruitment, and they also went out into the field to ask the questions. And let's begin with our results and findings, beginning with the key structural barriers identified. Firstly, lack of insurance and cost of mental health services. This is very common across all literature and is not just unique to the Latino community. Also, providing some quotes for many of the barriers that we identify. Just, you can read them. I'm not going to go through them. And secondly, negative interactions with mental health staff. And we categorize this as a structural barrier versus an attitudinal barrier, simply because when taking the data in context, it seemed after their experience of interacting with the staff, they were unsatisfied and they felt the staff was incompetent, mainly in the area of cultural competency. Secondly, our key attitudinal barriers include the lack of trust in medications and mental health professionals. Secondly, fear of deportation due to undocumented status. Being in Southern California, we were able to interact with many immigrants who are not here in the United States legally, and some of their reflections will come up a little bit later in our findings. And thirdly, the general fear of being labeled crazy, the common stigma that you'll find in literature as well. Moving on to cultural barriers specific to the Latino community. Firstly, the ideology behind feminismo. Feminismo is defined as the strong identification and loyalty to family. Now, this can be seen as a strength. It can act, this strong family support can act as a protective factor, perhaps preventing against the onset of these illnesses, and also helps with the maintenance of general mental health. But when we were analyzing our data from the qualitative data that we had collected, we seemed to find that this could be acting almost as a barrier as well, and that they place so much importance on this family structure and the relationships that are within that they do not want to jeopardize it by any means, and they want to protect it as much as they can. That means that they are going to internalize and not seek services, and ironically, try to handle the situation on their own, away from the family support. So again, that quote is just emphasizing problem solving and self-reliance to protect the family. Secondly, let's discuss the relationship between collectivism and individualism. For those who practice traditional cultural values, they tend to see things more in the realm of collectivism, seeing their society as a unit and doing things together, interdependence and whatnot. Whereas if you are practicing the host culture values, then you tend to see things in the realm of individualism. For those who are viewing things in the collectivistic scope, again, it's very similar to the idea of familismo, in that they want to protect those relationships, not only in their family, but in their social circle now. So again, they are going to be, ironically, handling everything on their own. Thirdly, we found that explanatory models of illness tend to act as barriers, and more specifically, culturally bound illnesses. Back in 1986, Kleiman defined illness as how the patient interprets their loss of health, including what caused the illness. Whereas disease is often defined or seen as something that is more objective, something which is diagnosed and defined by the care provider. When you look at explanatory models of illness, you're considering how the individual makes sense of the entire process, what means of remedying the situation they think are important. And so when culture affects these explanatory models, it often splits causation into three different categories, naturalistic, personalistic, and supernatural. We can all kind of guess what supernatural might be. Natural is something as easy as a relationship between hot and cold. For example, if you go to sleep with wet hair, you have a greater propensity of waking up ill. Whereas personalistic, causation tends to be where they actually believe that someone if they have the intention, they can will someone to become ill. Examples of the culturally bound illnesses are listed there: evil eye, nervios, and hexes. And actually, evil eye is seen as the unintentional gaze cast on someone that causes that person to become ill. And lastly, religion and faith. You might wonder what it's doing in the barrier section, because usually it's seen as a means of remedying the situation. But in this context, often in the Latino culture, faith is very important to them, along with religion, and they often equate the two, mental health and faith. So the first quote, I'll just read it out. "Therefore, if one loves God, if one has faith, it does not matter what religion it is, mental health will be more in equilibrium." What happens when that dynamic is skewed? But what will it be of a Christian person who is depressed? How will it be if we knew that one of the church leaders is depressed? What would be our reaction? He does not have a close relationship with God. He does not have faith. He does not have hope. So this just adds to the stigma that we already discussed. We categorized the recommendations put forth by participants into these three sections. Firstly, there is a need for culturally specific responses and interventions, and this is from our perspective, being able to look across the three racial cohorts. Secondly, there is a need for engagement of community members in identifying needs and responses to mental health needs, and we feel that Project Access was kind of the catalyst or the beginning point for this. And thirdly, recognizing cultural traits as needs and assets, again, reflecting back to those culturally bound illnesses. Some of the specifics that were put forth by the participants: an increased use in the health promotores, and also peer advocates. And just from the aspect of time, we'll continue on. Secondly, there is a need to provide mental health education at faith-based organizations and to really tap into that existing infrastructure and network. And thirdly, there's a need for mental health providers to understand Latino culture-bound illnesses, very similar to what a lot of or these two ladies were speaking about in cultural competency. And just to conclude, briefly summarize, we would not have been able to do or conduct this research without the help of our partners. Promotores played a huge role, and from that we were able to identify these cultural barriers to accessing mental health services and to gain community-driven recommendations. And I'd like to just share one initial outcome that occurred after the release of this report. DBH took it upon themselves to increase the capacity of El Sol's mental health promotores program by financially supporting them. They are actually going through the process of creating an educational institution for the promotores, and they are now active in our neighboring community, Riverside County, as well as San Bernardino County. Thank you for your time.